Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Collaborative Voices from Community Networks Aotearoa. Conversations and interviews on all kinds of subjects of interest to the community and voluntary sector. Listen up for Collaborative Voices from Wellington Access Radio. Welcome back to the second program where I'm talking to Tracy Martin. Back in 2017, Tracy became the Minister for Seniors. And now we are continuing the discussion that we had last month. Welcome to listening to me chatting to Tracy Martin, who is also speaking to us at our conference, Connecting for Change, which is in July. If you want to hear more from Tracy, especially talking on the subject of how to shape change without losing your why, make sure you register soon because we're running out of seats. But anyway, Tracy, let's talk about underinvestment in residential care. Everybody's being underinvested in, and everybody has been for some years, especially in the community and voluntary sector. But what are your thoughts about investment in residential care? I know that there is a residential care subsidy, but it's hard to get and it's hardly ever been adjusted. That's for people to get into residential care. And that implies that, you know, of course, there is a cost to residential care that we were just talking about before. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the underinvestment in residential care, especially with the boomer boom that's coming up?
Yeah, the aging population. Well, I spend a lot of time thinking about it. That's actually my major job, is to think about that. So, you know, and I took this role early in 2024, so I'm in sort of year three of this role. And I took the role because as the Minister for Seniors, I could see what was coming, and I found it very difficult as the Minister for Seniors to get government, to get other ministers' attention for what is the ageing population and the needs of at least one in five over 85-year-olds. They're going to need residential care. And why is it important? Why is the funding and the stability? Let's take it away from funding because everything needs to be resourced. But why would you resource it? Why would you resource this over something else? And it's because the downstream effect, if aged care fails, then the hospital system fails. At the moment, we've got a lot of news articles about EDs being overwhelmed, people having to wait a long time in emergency departments and so on and so forth. One of the reasons that we've got this backup in our emergency departments is because the wards are full. So those in the ED can't shift the people that out of the ED up into the wards. And the reason why the wards are full is because there's not enough aged care beds. There was a report done by a government agency that said that within the next 20 to 30 years, 9 out of 10 individuals inside a who are in a hospital bed will be over the age of 65. So that's our reality. And what I've been saying to government is we have a sector that has four times as many beds as you have hospital beds. So we have 40,000 beds currently, and they only have 10,000 hospital beds across the nation. We should be supporting you through, whether it be through recovery and return home or taking individuals in so that they can be in a less sort of hospital-like environment. But we can't do that at the moment because every single provider that I have loses money on every single New Zealander that comes in to stay with them. There is no equation for what the government pays for as a bed day rate to my members. It's a finger in the wind. We think this is fine. And so I'm doing a lot of work in that space. And the other thing that's happening is that we now have got more and more communities without residential care. So you've got Wairoa, you've got Reefton. We just had another 40-bed facility close in Levin 3 weeks ago. And those beds were the beds for people without money. And they're the ones that we really need. So we have to stabilize this sector for the sake of our health system, and we have to grow the sector for the benefit of our communities. We're shipping people. We had a gentleman taken from Dunedin and sent to Nelson because he needed secure dementia care. So he was separated from his family and his spouse in Dunedin and shipped up to Nelson because that's the only place in the South Island they had a secure dementia bed for him. That's what we're doing to New Zealanders at the moment.
Oh, okay. So I'm a bit lost for words,
I
really.
know we've got some cruel stuff going on, and it's fixable. That's the problem, Roz. It's fixable.
Are they aware? Is government aware that this
They
could
are
help?
now. They are now.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the first year of this role, my job, one of my what I wanted to do was I wanted to make sure that the New Zealand public understood what was happening, right, to their families and to spouses being separated and families having to pick up care because there was no respite care available. There were no day programs available. I mean, there's no dedicated budget line for day programs in New Zealand. There's no dedicated budget line across the nation for respite care in New Zealand. I mean, that's a failure. We could keep people at home for longer if we had day programs and if we had respite care. We could
Right.
support care partners so that they regain their strength or retain their strength if we had those available. So in the first year, I wanted the New Zealand public to know, and I think more and more of them know every day. More and more of them are living it every day. The second year, I wanted ministers to understand this is what I'm going to be doing to make your life difficult.
But in the
And
long run, you're trying to make their life easier.
well, that's right. I'm trying to solve a problem for government. And at the end of last year, Minister Costello announced a ministerial task force on aged care. So that task force is due to report back. They're supposed to give their interim recommendations to the minister 2 weeks ago. They were running a bit late, and they are supposed to provide their final recommendations to the minister in mid-June, but it'll be likely be early July. So we should hear before the election whether current government members are going to commit to the recommendations out of that advisory group, or they're not. And then they'll rise in September, and we'll go into the election with that with those recommendations.
And I've never heard the correlation before between the number of beds available in aged care helping the issue with full hospitals.
Yeah, I mean, aged care is health care. I
Yes,
mean,
it is.
aged care is health care. Just because you're over 65 or over 85, it doesn't mean health care stops. It
It
doesn't
gets
mean that
higher,
the
doesn't it?
no, and it doesn't mean that the government's responsibility to provide your clinical care stops either. If you can get clinical care at 35 in a hospital environment, then just because you're 85 doesn't mean you don't get the same level of respect and provision. It just might be in a different place, which is an aged residential care facility.
So let's watch this report that's due to come out closely. I think that it may lead to changes in policies from perhaps more than one party.
Yeah.
And let's keep a really close eye on that and see what sort of promises come out from the provision of that report, if any.
Well, yeah.
I
So it
think
has
it's.
got cross-party support, and I mean, I've been working across the parliament. That's
Yeah.
the other thing that you have to do. You have to work across the parliament
Yes.
because you never know who's going to make up the next government. You should
No.
never try and predict it.
No, you don't. And that's what a lot of NGOs are very aware of too. That it doesn't matter if there's an election and a party gets in that you don't like, you have to learn to work with them.
Right.
You must.
Yeah.
And we truly, as a sector, understand that that's important when you're working with government. Couple of final things that we can maybe just touch on quickly. Hospital capacity affecting aged care, well, I had there, and I think that's been touched on in your previous answer.
Yeah.
So, unless there's anything else you'd like to add to hospital capacity affecting aged care.
Well, I think the only other thing, one of the things that we're asking for from government at the moment is an infrastructure grant fund. We've got very old buildings. You remember that New Zealand deinstitutionalized in the 1980s, right? So about the mid-1980s. So that was when the government decided to get out of looking after old people and it privatized everything. So that's how aged residential care is 100% privatized. But what we've, so most of their buildings are actually from the 1990s. But how we care for people, particularly those with dementia, has changed. Our understanding of how to manage that illness and care for those individuals has changed dramatically. So if we had an infrastructure grant fund, not only would organisations like Presbyterian Support Services, who have $10 million worth of deferred maintenance because they decided to put their money on trying to look after more and more of our seniors who don't have any money, they would be able to do their deferred maintenance and make sure their buildings don't close. But we'd also be able to re-establish some residential care facilities inside our smaller communities. Because, I mean, those individuals that have always lived in Ekitahuna, they deserve to be able to stay there until they die. We shouldn't ship people out away from their families and community members and the people who visit them.
Sons.
Finally, let's quickly talk about advocacy. We have an issue with advocacy in the community, the nonprofit sector, because if you're a member, if you're signed up as a charitable trust and you've been registered by Charity Services, one of the things that they ask of you is that advocacy is not your prime purpose for being, which is really interesting because if you can't advocate on behalf of your members when you are an organized, this is my point of view, when you can't advocate on behalf of your members when you are someone who are looking after people who are vulnerable, then what can you do? The reality is you can advocate, but it can't be your prime purpose. I think that it's attached a bad name to advocacy. And I think with all the issues that are going on at the moment about people secretly having contact with MPs and telling them what they should have in their policies and things like that, has caused a problem about advocacy being listened to.
Well, I think the first statement is, and I say it a lot, there's a difference between lobbyists and advocates.
Yes, there sure
Right?
is.
So a lobbyist is somebody that you pay money to, an organization pays money to get you in the door to see a minister. They don't necessarily care about your
Issue.
particular issue. You're just paying them for access. So that's the first thing. That's a lobbyist. And I don't have anything against lobbyists, but let's be clear, that's what their job is. I'm an advocate. So I don't pay anybody else. I have a single set of parameters that I am advocating for. I am advocating for older New Zealanders to be able to access aged residential care. That's what I'm advocating for. And the people who pay my wages, they all pitch in, all of the 670 facilities pitch in some money to pay my wages to make sure that we advocate for those New Zealanders that they want to serve. Now, so that's the difference. We're not lobbyists, we're advocates. So I think we know what we're doing and we know who we're representing and why we're doing it, and it's
You
really
know who
clear.
you need to talk to.
And I think, and the only other thing I would say is that, and I have seen it with charitable organizations and when I've spoken at other conferences. As a minister, when the message is divided, you're actually not able to grab hold of any one thing and take it through to cabinet. So if I was giving advice to groups of charities who are providing social services into community, it would be create an offshoot advocacy body. All pitch in. Come in and do your strategic planning. Do a 4-year, you should have a 4-year advocacy strategic plan. Fund that organization to be your advocate. It's not a charity then. It's an advocacy body, and it should do all of that, all of the toing and froing, et cetera, with ministers. And that would be my suggestion. That's a way to actually be much more sort of cohesive and coherent around that advocacy.
That's a really good idea because we often say to ministers, you go, but I heard this from this person and this from this person and this from this person. And we go, we are like the community. We have all got different points of view. But
But
I
that
can see how the difficulty for the minister to see what the real issues are
well,
would.
unfortunately, let's just think about this. It's really useful for government, whether it be government ministers or whether it be their agencies. It's really useful when community groups fight each other for the scraps from the top table. It's really useful. They get you to bend over backwards to do more, to change your purpose.
And to for
To try
less.
and stay alive because you are the people looking the families in the eye who don't have any food. You are the people who are looking after the drug addicts and the alcoholics and so on and so forth. You're looking them in the eye, the agency's not. So if the organizations were to come together and agree on what would be good for the whole, it doesn't mean you have to be all the same. But what are the 4 or 5 things that you all agree would be good for everybody? And those are the things that the central voice you all stay on track with. And then you
Yeah.
can do, you still do your own meetings. Nobody's saying you're not allowed to do your own meetings with your local MPs. You're just a bit more cohesive and strategic when it comes to dealing with government.
Yeah. It's been really interesting because we've complained for years that government actually putting us all in competition with each other ends up with the lowest common denominator, not the best answer. And because we are all in competition with each other for funding when we're looking for funding from government. So that's a interesting commentary. I think it might be extremely difficult to do just thinking about the situation in the sector at the moment, but I think it's a good answer. Thank you for that.
Well, and I don't think, and I see if the sector doesn't do something different, nothing will change.
That's right. True, true, true. Well, Tracy, I think we've come to the end. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. We've been talking to Tracy Martin, and Tracy is going to be speaking at our conference on the 27th and the 28th of July. So come along, register quickly. We're 75% sold out, and we're really looking forward to hearing from you then. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me.
Thanks, Roz. See ya.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.